Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Janine Loudon, sometimes known Loud and Clear. Welcome to Lunch with Loudon on Coffee Talk Radio, brought to you thanks to the wonders of modern technology like Blog Talk Radio, Facebook, Scoop It, Twitter, Google Plus, you name it, YouTube, the bits that make up the 99% media, the way we roll today in Coffee Party USA. I'm calling in today from a very, very wet and windy Willamette Valley. And with me today are my co-pilot, Debbie Lynn Molyneux, and my very special guest, Cheryl Hatch. So I'm going to start with Debbie Lynn. Debbie Lynn, where are you calling in from today?
Hey, today I'm down in Fresno, California, where it's a beautiful, sunny 75 degrees or so and not wet at all.
So I'm totally annoyed, you know.
I know. I just had to say that just for your sake.
So thanks. And Cheryl. Cheryl Ann Hatch, where are you calling in from today?
I'm calling in from Fairbanks, Alaska, where it is sunny with some clouds, and the sun doesn't seem to actually set. I think we have 18 plus hours of daylight right now. So I've been up for a long time already.
Oh, that's excellent. And what are you doing in Alaska right now?
Well, last year I taught at the University of Alaska Fairbanks as the Snedden Endowed Chair in the Department of Journalism, and I started a project covering the soldiers from the 125th Striker Brigade who are based at Fort Wainwright next to Fairbanks, and the soldiers did a one-year deployment in Afghanistan, and they've just returned home, so I came back to finish the project with my students and be here for the end of the soldiers' deployment and the sort of getting back with their families and the ceremonies and all the events attached to that, parades and whatnot. So, and to see a couple of my students graduate.
Oh, yeah, to finish the cycle.
Exactly.
Well, that's part of the reason that I'm invited you on the show today, because as you know, it's what I wanted to talk about today was sort of a pre-memorial weekend show. And I have a few things to say about that, and I think I'll sort of wind this around to say why it was important for me to have you on the show today. But I want to start, for all my listeners, to sort of the place where I am with regard to Memorial Day. I think it's really important to distinguish the concept of war from our recognition of the warrior. Because while it's meaningful to debate the virtues or the lack of virtues for any given war, it is not okay with me to debate the virtue of those killed in action. It's not about theory or opinion or cliches, because in that moment, an American passed from life to death, and I can only offer my respect. So I guess I think that's pretty clear. I don't ever confuse a political action, which is declaring war, but that very sacred action of giving up one's life. Those are two very different things to me. So I did a little research, you guys, on Memorial Day, because I was unclear about why, when I was younger, it wasn't such a big deal and why today is a big deal to me. And I wasn't surprised when I did my homework. It's like Memorial Day started out, maybe you knew this, it was first called Decoration Day, and it was a remembrance of those who died in our national service, but specifically, it started during the time of the Civil War, after the Civil War. And it's almost rumor, but accepted rumor, that it started by women's groups in the South. And it came in and out of favor over the decades, century plus since then. But I think that's in part because it's not really like a Hallmark card kind of holiday, you know what I'm saying? And people had different emphasis and intentions with Memorial Day, but it always revolved around honoring the war dead. And it didn't actually become a holiday, you know, within my lifetime that it became a holiday. Cheryl, and, well, I think all of us here are old enough that it happened. It was in, I think, 1967. And it's interesting to me because it sort of morphed into remembering all the dead or tidying up cemeteries or family reunions or the first day of summer. But it's really has its roots in embracing and honoring and remembering those who passed in action. And one of the reasons I was so glad, Cheryl, that you were available today was because it was really you who reintroduced me to what Memorial Day was all about. You and I, if you remember, met about, well, it was a little more than 20 years ago, I think. I'm not sure I'm fessing up to how long ago.
I think it's probably, yeah, a little bit more than that. But, yeah, you tell the story. I think I might know the story.
I know. We're dating ourselves when we say this. But, well, I'm
yeah, we can avoid doing that. I don't mind if we avoid doing that a little bit.
but you had just returned from Iraqi Kurdistan. And yep, you were using my husband's darkroom, Jim's darkroom, to develop those amazing images of the Iraqi people near the end of Desert Storm. So mm-hmm. I guess that dates us right there, doesn't it?
Yep.
And you ended up settling in my town for a while, and we became great friends. And I'll never forget you calling me up and say, hey, let's go to the Memorial Day service. And we went to the little cemetery in Southtown. And for me, it was a life-changing day. But I really got that for you, it was just a way of life to go to this memorial service.
Yeah.
And do you remember that day, Cheryl, or is that just one of many?
I do remember it very specifically, and I remember the ceremony, and I remember the cemetery because it's so sweet. It's small, but there were veterans from all the wars, and, you know, there are certain parts of the service that are always the same. So, yeah, I do remember it very, very well, but it is part of my my life that I do always attend a Memorial Day service every year. I think that it stems from both my personal life and my professional life because I'm the daughter of a career soldier, and my dad did two tours in Vietnam, and my uncle did two tours in Vietnam, and they both came back safely. My other uncle, was in the Army Reserves, and my great uncle fought and died in World War II. So the concept of soldiers and sacrifice and family and sacrifice and giving one's life, you know, I've over the years had conversations with my father about that, the choices and the choices you have and that you don't have if you took an oath to serve. So yes, I mean, I go every year to a memorial service. Sometimes, you know, you have to look around to find one, but there's always one.
One of the things that really touched me on that day and really rekindled my, really made me reevaluate my thinking was, I don't remember if you remember, but way at the back, there was a young woman with two little girls, and she was holding an MIA flag. Do you remember her?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that just really touched me, that in addition to all those we've lost, we have literally lost track of many soldiers and seamen and airmen who, you know, they just never came home. And it had never occurred to me until that day that was a time to remember them. The mission in action.
My student, Jaron Chetta, when we started this project, I did a two-month embed or two separate one-month embeds with these soldiers in Afghanistan. And JR went with me the first month that we spent in Afghanistan, which would have been his Christmas holiday break from university. And yesterday I was talking to him about this program, and you know that I'm always happy to give presentations and talk, but I've noticed that this time being so, I was having a really hard time with seeing the soldiers come home and being reunited with family and having lived the experience with them. And I was like, gosh, I don't know. I might be too emotional for this subject matter this year, but because I was really already deeply moved by your intro, so about the difference between the war and the warrior. But so we were talking about it yesterday, and JR actually didn't know what Memorial Day was. And I said, well,
really?
I understand. Yeah, well, I mean, he didn't, you know, he didn't get, he said, well, is it like for all veterans or is it just for soldiers who have been killed? And I said, well, it is to remember those who have died in battle, but, you know, I suppose it's however you want to extend it in your mind to what you want to honor and remember. And he said, well, I think everybody dies a little bit, so everybody should be remembered.
Okay, that's about right.
Yeah, that's about right. Is, you know, everybody dies a little bit. Those who are there, those are waiting for them to come home, the journalists who cover it, everybody dies a little bit. But if we circle back to, and I did the same research you did, that it started out in the Civil War time to honor the dead. And but the idea of remembrance and memorial, I think you're totally within your rights to extend it to whatever you think is appropriate. So.
Well, you know, I do too, because I certainly, well, and there are other groups, it's very sensitive to touch on this, but I posted a story a while ago on my news blog about how the number of our warriors that come home from Iraq or Afghanistan who then take their own lives is astounding. And are they the war dead? It feels like it to me. And Debbie Lynn, would you like to weigh in on this one? Or you have a question for Cheryl?
Well, I do. I was just wondering, you know, because there are so many ways in which we take these life-changing experiences and these losses, and we turn them into transformative experiences in ourselves. And I'm also, so I just wondered, Cheryl, if there was that type of experience for you as we go through this Memorial Day, you know, what in you has transformed as well as a result of what you've gone through over the years?
Oh, well, that's a, wow, that's a thoughtful and it's going to take a little bit of an answer. Thoughtful question, maybe a little bit of an extensive answer. Well, I think I mentioned earlier that my dad was a career soldier, so I always felt like as I got older, you know, my dad joined the Army, but I didn't. I didn't have a choice. And it's a particular lifestyle that requires, you know, a lot of moving, a lot of uprooting. And then, of course, you know, twice, knowing that my dad was going off to war and waiting for my dad to come home. So, and then as a journalist later in life, I covered conflict for 10 years in the Middle East and Africa. And so I've seen it from the other side, how it affects civilians, women, children, the destruction to the environment. But I had never done an embed. I had never been on the soldier's side. So for me to go and do an embed with the American military for the first time in my life was sort of bringing my life full circle. Because my dad never has really spoken about his experiences, and I asked, you know, every now and then, but it's just not something we're going to talk about. And then I realized for myself at one point that I didn't really want to talk about it either, and you learn to respect people's privacy. But I think, how's it changed me? Well, I have a really deep abiding reverence for life. I have a sense that there are plenty of things that most people have the illusion they have control over. I don't have that illusion anymore. I'm really grateful for every day that I get up and I'm upright and I'm breathing. And I have a better, stronger appreciation for what it means to be a soldier and to take that oath and to step up when you're called. Whether you want to go or not, whether you're afraid or not, whether you have to leave your family behind or not. And that sort of references back to what Janine was introducing in the beginning, that no matter how you feel about the war, no matter how you feel about the politics, and having walked behind these soldiers, you know, they walk out there with a minesweeper and they fall single file across these fields, and at any given moment they could get blown up. You know, they step up every day because they said they would. So, yeah, for me personally, I just have a deeper respect for, well, life in general, and for the soldiers in particular, and for this group of soldiers, the 125th from Fort Wainwright. It was their second deployment. They'd been deployed to Iraq, and in their first deployment, three soldiers killed in the whole year. And in Afghanistan, they had three soldiers killed in the first 3 weeks. So the second deployment was particularly tough. And in the end, 21 were killed in this deployment. And I just attended that memorial service. So I don't know if that answered your question, Debbie Lynn, or not. But I think ultimately, I have a really strong reverence for life in general, and appreciating the time that I have with friends and just everything that I have. And I work pretty hard now at not making judgments or assumptions about things, because it's pretty easy to fall into judgments and assumptions and stereotypes, and I try not to do that.
Yeah.
But 21 soldiers is a high casualty rate. But is that higher than normal for Afghanistan, or is that... I know when my son did two tours in Iraq, and they managed to come home both tours with as many soldiers as they left with. And that's a wonderful thing in retrospect. I mean, obviously, we lost no one. But I tell you, being a parent of a soldier, every day, every day, every day, every minute of every day, you know, the phone rings, you think, well, at least it's a phone call. I mean, it could be somebody saying, hey, do you want to buy a sofa? It doesn't matter what it is. But when the phone rings, you go, at least it's a phone call, because that means nobody... you know, somebody's alive.
Nobody's knocking on the door.
Right, right. The doorbell rings, and one time I almost fainted, you know, because I wasn't expecting anybody. There was no reason for anybody to be knocking on the door, you know, ringing the doorbell. And I think it was, you know, Jehovah's Witnesses or somebody, and I said, please never ring my doorbell again. You know, it's like... just,
right.
And it wasn't about them. It was like, my son's in Iraq, I cannot cope with someone at the door.
Right.
It's good to
generate that awareness in people, because sometimes they're just lost sight of it, or they're not aware of it, or, you know, within a military community, everybody is aware of it, and they're all tuned in together, and they're connected tribe, and they're all supporting each other. But outside, you were not on a military base, so you didn't have that extended community of support. But yeah,
right. Well, what I did was hang my Blue Star flag at the front door, so
right.
If anybody had any clue about it, they would know better. Hello, they could say hello. You know, it was just like I would peek out the window by my door. I would peek out the door before I would open it. It was a terrible feeling. But, you know, I'm blessed that Blue Star stayed blue. And
right. And that's the thing I just spent time with, was they had the Gold Star families at this memorial service. As many of the family members of the 21 who had died, who had been killed, they came to attend the service here at Fort Wainwright. So, yeah. And you had asked if that was, you know, I don't know how to judge the number. I just know it was, you know, seven times more than they lost in the first deployment. And they were operating in southern Kandahar in a region, Panjway, which people call the heart of the Taliban. So it was a very dicey and hard.
And so
hard
for
spot.
Listeners that aren't familiar with military terminology, the Blue Star is what they give families who have active service members in combat zones, and the Gold Stars are from military families who've lost.
Correct.
Who've lost service number.
Thank you, Debbie Lynn.
You're welcome, yeah.
Yeah. And I was happy to pass my little flag on to another mom I met whose son was serving. And I said, this one served me well. You know, you keep mine. And but so this whole tradition of once you've been inside this, I don't want to call it a cocoon because that sounds so safe, but one does have a little different sense of it. But even before then, Cheryl, I mean, when you were
reporting from Desert Storm, when you were in Somalia, when you were in Eritrea, these other places, I think that you were altered by your experience. I think that's where your work, The Cost of Conflict, came from. And I think you brought a very interesting message forward, which was about, you know, what is the aftermath of this?
Right, and I think that's the thing that people don't think about. Some of it's tangible and you can see it. So a soldier lost a leg in an explosion, or, you know, there's tangible, or the town has been burned, or there's a large cemetery or whatever. But yeah, there's all of those intangibles. For me, the first time I went to war to cover it as a journalist, I went as a curiosity, you know, to sort of test myself, to try to understand what war was. And I went to Liberia. And then when I got there, I realized it's just nuttiness, you know, mayhem and brutality and completely inexplicable devastation and violence. It's madness, is what it is. It's really madness. At least that war was, and that did change me, because that was a popular story to cover, and then Iraq invaded Kuwait, and everybody left Liberia to go cover the war, in the impending war. And you realize, okay, there's wars going on all over the place, but they're not all getting attention, they're not all giving cover, and it's just, you know, where we decide to turn our eye. And after that, I thought, well, one, as a woman, I'm not that much interested in the guys who are shooting and killing people. I'm more interested in the civilians and the women and the children and how they cope long term. So that shifted my focus. And that was also what was interesting about circling back around and actually going on this embed and coming back to, well, the only way to really see what it's like for an American soldier, the only way to get close to it is to go with the soldiers and to go on patrol with them and to walk with them and behind them and, you know, pull guard duty and just try, you know, I'm never going to be a soldier. I'm not a soldier. I'm a soldier's daughter. I'm a journalist. But I'm never going to be a soldier. I don't carry a weapon, and it's a completely different approach. But, yeah, I would say that myself as a human being, I was marked by it, scarred by it, long, dark times, which also makes me more sensitive and aware of the long-term consequences for the soldiers as well. You can't necessarily see it right away, you know, leaving a war zone and coming home and trying to reintegrate into your family and your, quote, normal life after what you've lived, the intensity of what you've lived, those who didn't live. And these now in Afghanistan, for example, the injuries and the are so traumatic. Got people getting legs blown off and literally getting blown to pieces, and indiscriminate, you know, slaughter. We met two guys in the hospital, and the one guy had, they were on the same team, and the guy had kneeled to protect the rear of the patrol, and he knelt on a pressure plate, and it blew his leg off. And then his team leader heard the sound and came running back to help him, and then they pulled the command wire and blew him up as well. So it's just that craziness.
It's war.
And sharing that, huh?
It's war.
Yeah, sharing that experience. And when you come home, my experience was, when I talked about my dad, that he didn't talk about war, and that I don't talk about it. And you can talk about it with the people who shared it with you, but you, at least I can only speak for myself, I never felt like I wanted to bring that back into my life. You know, it felt like a poison or like some kind of nasty, toxic, radioactive thing. You know, what I'd seen, what I'd done, what I hadn't done, everything that happened in that combat zone or in that civil war or wherever I was, that should stay with me. You know, I didn't want to bring that home, or it came with me, but I didn't want to let it taint life. And so I think when you talk about the costs, that's one a lot, you know, that Jeanine was referring to probably, that the things that we don't see that are going to percolate out over time, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder, the high suicide rates, divorce, just all of the lingering legacy of war it's not so visible. It's not like a leg blown off, but it's just as devastating.
Gabby Lynn, I think you have another question.
Well, Cheryl actually just got to part of it. I was wondering about, were there people that you met while serving, you know, while with the troops, whether it was soldiers or it was soldiers, that have had lasting impacts with you? If you had any stories you could share.
About the soldiers in the 125th? And I spent my time primarily with one infantry battalion, which was the 1st Battalion, 5th Infantry Regiment. I think they're like the third oldest unit in the Army. And we had started our project. They do training in the Mojave Desert before they go to Afghanistan. So we went to that. Three students and myself went to that in February, and then they deployed in April 2011. And so there's a long, I have to start by saying, you know, the military, they've learned and they like to have journalists come, but it's a double-edged sword because it's risk-reward. You know, you want somebody there to tell your stories, and they're going to try their best to control what stories you're telling, and I'm going to try my best to tell stories, whatever they may be. My focus on the trip was we were really looking at the soldiers and what it was like to be overseas and what it was like for their families back home, and wanting to share the stories of just a soldier's life. So it was much more, for me, feature-based. But going into it, most soldiers have a sort of, you know, on the scale, either just completely reprehensible feelings. You know, they find the press reprehensible, untrustworthy, liberal motivations. And there's a deep, deep distrust of the press among a lot of soldiers. So I'm walking into that. I felt like, okay, I've grown up in the military, so I have an understanding of your life. And we have some rapport because we spent time together, and still it took time and a lot of, you know, patrols and a lot of conversations to build the trust and for them to be willing to talk. So memorable things. I think, for one thing, for me it was memorable that they would take us along on the patrol. You know, we're not soldiers, so on a certain level we're a liability, and yet they're responsible for us. So I was always deeply moved by the soldiers who kind of stood in front and behind me on all those patrols, knowing that, you know, they had me as an extra liability, and they had my student as an extra liability, although, you know, we held our own, and they remarked on, you know, that we had done well. But a particular soldier story, you know, they're a lot of them, especially the non-commissioned officers, very young, you know, so you're talking 19, 20, 21 years old. A lot of them married. A lot of them have young children. And if you sit during a smoke break or in guard duty, they're infantrymen, so the conversations can frequently be quite bawdy. And, you know, there's a lot of... a lot of guys joking about all the usual things, but underneath all of that, there's still this, you know, deep longing for home and missing their wives and missing their children, and the stress is difficult for them. You know, I remember I wrote a blog throughout my whole time there, and a lot of the wives and family members were following my blog, and they would send me notes saying, "We're so glad to have your blog, that we have a sense of what's going on over there," because the soldiers don't talk about it. One, for operational reasons, they can't talk about it. And two, because I think a little bit what I was explaining earlier, you don't want to talk about it. They're there, they're doing their job, and that's it. So I think I've lost my train of thought in answering your question, but that's just, I just was privileged to be able to understand what their lives were like and what they were going through, not just, you know, every day getting up and having to go out on a patrol, but, you know, there were quite a few of them who really opened up to me and shared. There was one young soldier who, you know, the guys who carry the Valen, the guys who carry the minesweeper, they're the ones who take point on the patrol, and they're the ones who are responsible for making sure the path is clear. So there's that responsibility, you know, like I need to bring my guys back safely. And sometimes you do and sometimes you don't. And there's that burden of keeping people safe, but also knowing that, you know, every day there's no guarantees that somebody might not be injured or killed. So I just felt privileged to hear their stories and to know at some point they trusted me enough to share them and that I could turn around and share those with their families. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I answered your question, Debbie Lynn.
Yeah, you got to it. Is your blog something that's still live that you'd want to share with our listeners?
Oh yeah, it is still live, and I'm going to do what I call backward blogging because the soldiers are all home, and I still have lots of pictures and posts I want to do. I just had a little setback where I wasn't able to work a while, but it's www.north and then the numeral 2, the future, north to the future, .wordpress.com, and I took that title because I started when I came to Alaska, and that's the motto here, North to the Future, and that's what I was doing. I left Oregon and came to Alaska, so I thought it was a good blog name. But yeah, you can go all the way back probably to when we first started working with the soldiers and my experiences with my students, and then the training in the Mojave Desert, and then the deployment in Afghanistan, and then I've woven in there sort of personal reflections as well about my own insights and my own experiences. So, yeah, it's still live, and I'll be writing something about that. I attended. They did a parade, and the whole brigade went out and paraded through downtown Fairbanks. They did the memorial service for the 21 soldiers who died, and then they did a wounded warrior walk, and we attended all of those. And I have. Want to write about all of that, and just it's not there yet, so it will be. It'll still be live, and there'll still be plenty to follow. But you can go backward.
Yeah, right, that's right. And Janine, I see posted that in the chat feature on Blog Talk Radio. So for those of you who are listening online, you can pick that up in the chat feature. There's a link to
also,
Cheryl's blog.
And one of the blogs about a fallen soldier has been posted on scoopit.com and on a few of the Facebook pages for Coffee Party USA. And we could post another one or two if people are interested. So you can go there and link to one of Cheryl's blogs, which, of course, will open you up to the entire website. So one of the things I appreciate about your sharing about this battalion, Cheryl, is that it makes real, again, for me, the notion that when we go to a Memorial Day service, when we honor this upcoming holiday, this is who we're honoring, these very ordinary guys who I'm sure run the gamut in terms of their personalities, their lifestyles, where they come from in the country, what church they go to, what political party they belong to, you name it. I'm sure that this group of men and women, and I'd like to hear a little bit about the women too, but these people represent like this broad cross cut of America. And yet,
it's true
out
because,
there.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say you're absolutely right because I'm always asking people, you know, where are you from? And we had, so, you know, you'd look around and it is exactly that. You would see the entire cross culture of what it is to be American. You had soldiers from Guam and Palau and Hawaii. You had people from Kentucky and Pennsylvania and Florida, from Texas and Alaska and California. Yeah, you probably had people from everywhere, and like you said, from rural backgrounds and urban backgrounds, and who had joined the Army for different reasons, you know, as part of a family legacy or as a way to get out of a gang, or it was a way to eventually get money for school, or it was a way to create a better life for their children. You know, and I heard that time and time again, you know, this is a good job and this will make a difference for my family, and I'm doing this for my family and I'm doing it for my country. So, yeah, you're exactly right. They're coming from all walks of life. It's just the, all parts of America. Puerto Rico, right. Too, quite a few.
So yeah. It's sort of an equal opportunity employer, if you want to call it like that, but it's also an equal opportunity way to lose your life. And so I'm not sure, you know, I'm not interested in prying into the demographics of the 21 who we lost from that deployment, but it's true that in across the board in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in the many places we are around the world, in Korea, in Vietnam, in World War II, in World War I, in the Civil War. As a matter of fact, it's wonderful to me in a way that this all started with the Civil War because all the dead were American. Right? And, you know, today I mourn them all. You know, you don't have to be from the North or the South. And given my particular roots, I didn't root for either team. You know what I mean? I wasn't in that game. My husband's family was in that game. You know, my husband's family signed the Declaration of Independence. My husband's family, you know, came across on the Mayflower, but not mine.
Right.
Not mine.
I
honor them all. Go ahead.
No, I was saying I was hoping at some point before the end of the program, I have the names of the 21 soldiers, and I thought it would be great if before the end of the program I could read those names. And when I was looking at them, I could see, okay, Wisconsin, Indiana, Guam, Alaska, just what you were just talking about. But
please do. This is fine.
Do you want me to do that now?
Sure. Now is a fine time.
Okay, so these are the 21 soldiers who were killed in Afghanistan from the 125th Striker Brigade Combat Team out of Fort Wainwright, Alaska. So Private Ryan Larson from Wisconsin, PFC Brent Wood from Indiana. Specialist Calvin Pareda from Guam. Specialist Jonathan McCain from Alaska. Specialist James Burnett Jr. from Kansas. PFC Matthew C. Collins from Florida. Specialist Christoph Marquis from Florida. Sergeant Timothy Sane, Illinois. Specialist Bradley L. Melton, Missouri. PFC Chesvre Presley, South Carolina. Private Lemerel J. Tucker from Florida. PFC Douglas L. Cordo, New York. Sergeant Jeffrey C. S. Schreer, North Carolina. PFC Dustin P. Napier, Kentucky. First Sergeant Kenneth B. Elwell, Pennsylvania. PFC Tyler M. Springman, Maine. PFC Brandon S. Mullins, Kentucky. Private Danny Chen, New York. Specialist Douglas J. Green, Virginia. Sergeant Rodolfo Rodriguez, Jr., Texas. Specialist Ryan J. Cook, Florida. Those are the 21 from the 125th Striker Brigade.
Well, and I want to let listeners know that if they would like to call up and mention their own stories, like Cheryl is mentioning hers, the number is 646-929-2495. Press 1 if you'd like to speak. I can tell the difference then between people just listening on the phone and people who would like to speak. And if you'd like to ask Cheryl a question, same number. So I think, thank you so much for doing that, Cheryl, because I think it's important to know that these are, like I said, from the Civil War until today, these are Americans from everywhere. And again, I want to go back to my original statement that I don't have to agree with the war to honor their service and their, you know, ultimate sacrifice. And I don't even want to, I refuse to have the debate in the same breath. You know, the time
yeah,
for
I would totally
debating,
support you in that.
Yeah, the time to debate the war is not Memorial Day. You know, I will do that every other day. You know, we can have conversations about politics pretty much any day of the year except this one, because I just won't do it. And it, to me, it's just inappropriate. This is, you know, I guess I'd be like, I don't know, think of something inappropriate to do in church, and then they'd be like that. You know, make up your own analogies, you know, whatever would be inappropriate to do in your church. But and the other part that I appreciate is that there are the thing I want to honor you for, Cheryl, is that, as you said, you're not a soldier, but you have gone to war. And journalists like you have gone to war. And journalists like you, thank goodness not you, have lost their lives at war. And so I will admit that on a day like Memorial Day, I honor them as well. And I know that you've lost friends in war zones.
Yep.
And I know that that's another soft spot, but it's also a place of that you respect them on this day. There are also the, I don't know, I don't think that we should not honor those who support our troops in harm's way. And, you know, I don't want to get into the minutia of it all, but there are many who take care of them and that they are also in danger. And I just want to acknowledge that I know they're there. But again, today is the day for our soldiers. So Memorial Day is the day for the warriors, so to speak. So,
I think it's great to remember that because I think as well, it's easy to just think of it as a day off work or a day for a barbecue or the beginning of summer. And there's nothing wrong with that because all of those things are true, you know. But at the same time, it's nice to have this opportunity, your program, and to make the point that this is what it's about. You know, this is what its intention is. And if you have forgotten or you didn't know, now you have a choice. I know my parents. My mom goes out every day in the early morning of Memorial Day, and she has a whole, you know, handful of flags, and they line her entire curb and up her driveway. It's quite a sight, you know, and every year she and my dad put out the flags for Memorial Day and Veterans Day and, you know, all of the holidays. But, yeah, I was thinking about this speech that at the memorial service that I attended, Major General Palumbo, they had this, he mentioned a verse in, he called it a noble calling, this call to duty and sacrifice. And he said, he quoted Isaiah 6:8, and said, there's a quote in there that says, "Who will go for us? And here I am, Lord, send me." And that was the theme throughout the entire memorial services. You know, you call somebody up and somebody raises his hand and says, "I'll go," so you don't have to go. And they believe that. And that theme kept coming up again and again. And whether you're religious or not, and whether that deeply, deeply moved me to hear that over and over again and face the granite, you know, plaques honoring these 21 soldiers. And, you know, if you think about Arlington Cemetery or you think about Gettysburg or you think about any of these places, you think, okay, yeah, send me, I'll go.
And, you know, it's one of the things that you said is that you have been places where it was hard for you to find a Memorial Day service. So where does one look if they're, you know, somehow inspired now to attend a service or participate somehow? What lengths did you have to go through to find a service in some of your locations? I mean, do you look in a newspaper? Do you look on the web?
You can look at a newspaper. Nowadays, you could probably Google it online. You could look up your local VFW, Veterans of Foreign Wars, probably even the local Chamber of Commerce or the community calendar in the paper. Yeah, any of those. I've done all of those. So
the reserves, you know, the National Guard,
yeah,
whatever the National Guard place is.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of different places to look to find out what's happening. Parades, a memorial service at a cemetery. Those are the two that usually a community will host. And then anything else, I'm not sure, but.
Well, and I think the other thing that maybe we don't remember is that in addition to the passing of these warriors, for everyone gone, there's a hole in the heart somewhere. And we have a way of, to me, this is also a way of honoring the loss or the sacrifice of those left behind. So even though they're not here to see your mom put out the flags and they're not here to see whatever it is, service that we attend or the flag we run up on the driveway, whatever, those they've left behind are here. And it's a way of telling the mothers, the fathers, the aunts, the uncles, my mother-in-law is 99 years old. It's a way of telling her, you know, that we remember her brothers or we remember her uncles that didn't return. And so I think that message is a sweet embrace of those who were left to carry on. And I don't think that's unimportant. If we as Americans consider ourselves a nation of diverse communities that sort of share this nation of ours, I think one thing that we all have in common is this love of America, this patriotism, and to extend to one another this embrace at this time, I think, is something we can do. And it doesn't matter which community. We heard how many communities those soldiers came from when you read their names and where they came from, all over America, all kinds of last names, all kinds of cities, in, like you were saying, urban, rural, you know, island, island guys, mainland guys, whatever. And
right,
but the embrace is like ubiquitous when we put up our flag on that day, when we say it matters to us that you are the family of these people, and we thank you, those that were left behind. So it's one of those few days. Although those of you who know me know I have a little flag in my window and a little candle that comes on every night, you know, because until these wars are over, I have a candle in the window. So that's a whole nother issue. So, you know, this has just been wonderful, Cheryl. Is there anything you would like to say to your friends in Alaska or anything that else you'd like to tell us about your experience in war or anyone else that you would like to mention? Any websites you'd like to point us to for any of your wonderful photojournalism?
Well, for certainly you had mentioned the women and we didn't talk about them too much, but you can Google my name, Cheryl Hatch, and find a lot of the work. I had 4 stories with JR's photos published in the Fairbanks Daily News Miner during our first embed, and then talked about what it was like to be away at the holidays. We went on an air assault mission and then also talked about these women in the female engagement team who were doing outreach to the Afghan women. I have a photographic website, isisphotos.com, so like the Egyptian goddess, isisphotos.com. That's my previous work in the Middle East and Africa. Nothing from Afghanistan is up there yet. I just had a piece published in the Christian Science Monitor on these women soldiers who are part of this female engagement team that works with the Afghan women. I could probably send you those links too, Janine, if there's somewhere that you want to share them. But I think if you Google my name, you'll find quite a bit. The blog. I've gone back and read the blog, and it's I've enjoyed it. I mean, I did the writing, but a lot of it, I in the moment didn't didn't realize what I was writing necessarily. It's impactful and it's insightful, I think. It's weird to say that about myself, but I think it's a good read. I like it. But I would want to recognize first and foremost just the long history of service of my own family and for my dad as well and for my mom and for my siblings who've gone through this experience of being separated and living and waiting for dad to come home and watching the TV and hoping that he'll come home. And then just thank all the way down the chain of command here from the 125th, Colonel Todd Wood, who's just been replaced, that he did the change of command and we attended that. Colonel Brian Payne from the 15, who was the person who gave us access to the story and his soldiers. He said, "I'm proud of my soldiers. Go out and tell the stories. If you find anything wrong, we'll fix it, but I'm proud of them and I want their stories to be told and shared." So I just have the greatest respect for these soldiers. And, you know, for me, they're heartbreakers. I fell in love with a lot of them. And it's the embed, it's a challenge for a journalist to spend that time and share those difficulties and, you know, find that fine line between keeping it balanced and but getting close enough to really be able to tell its story in a true and authentic way. So I feel close to these soldiers and their families, and I feel honored that I was able to spend time with them and bring their stories home. And for me, I think ultimately that was all motivated by the fact that it was so different in Vietnam. The army was different. The life was different. The reception to the soldiers when they came home was so different. And the parade that I went to here in Fairbanks, you know, they honored the other vets. And then when the Vietnam vets went by, they said, you know, "We know that you did not get a welcome home, and we know that you served proudly, and we're here today to honor you and remember you." And so I think a lot of what I've done, at least in this case, has been driven by that. I asked my dad, you know, "I know you weren't well received by the community, but when you came home, weren't there people with signs and flags at the base?" He said, "No, I stepped off the plane and went back to work." So I think of all of those Vietnam vets who were never honored. And so for me, it's deeply moving to see that particular piece, like what you started your program with, is you may hate the war, you may not agree with the war, but don't take it out on the soldiers. What they've done and what they stand for and what they believe in and what they're willing to sacrifice their lives. So they're willing to step up whether they want to go or not. You know, my dad said, "Sure, it was my duty." You know, did he really like leaving us behind? No, but he took an oath and said he'd go. And that's what these young guys, you know, the soldiers in the 125th and all soldiers have done, you know, and they know what they're getting into. So I just wanted to, you know, I would say thank you. I think it's been a real privilege to be able to share those stories and I don't know, you even have an opportunity to be here to speak today and to remind people to think about Memorial Day and what it means. So, yeah.
Right. Well, it's always fun chatting with you, Cheryl. And Debbie Lynn, do you have any last question of Cheryl or something you'd like to add, an acknowledgement or someone you'd like to have us remember with you?
Cheryl just choked me up here in that last little bit that she was talking about. And, I just have a few people in my family that have served short tours, not a lifetime career. And my dad avoided Vietnam because he had a wife and child. And for some reason, they didn't send him to Vietnam because of that, Cheryl. So I don't know how we got so lucky. He went over into Turkey instead. So grateful for that.
But I think if people search, I know last year on Veterans Day when I was teaching, I had a soldier come into the PAO, Major Dave Maddox, who helped facilitate our embed and our access to the base. He came in, and I had a couple of other soldiers came in, and we just talked about Veterans Day and working with the military. But I had people stand up. I had active duty airmen and soldiers in my class But I had each person, if they knew anybody who had served, to stand up. And at first it was only a few people. And then as they listened to other people, they realized, oh, my grandfather served in World War II. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, my uncle was killed in Vietnam. Oh, wait. And by the time that we'd gone around the class, you know, I'd say almost everybody in the classroom was standing up, that maybe you haven't thought about it or realized that you have somebody who served or somebody who was killed while serving. Mm-hmm. So it's a good reminder. I mean, that's what Memorial Day is. Remember and honor those who served and fell.
Right. And our freedom that we have in this country is because we have people who do that for us. And I think that's important to remember, too.
Oh, exactly, Debbie Lynn. It
doesn't happen by chance.
No. It's not an accident, and that's why I think on the days when we do want to discuss the appropriateness of war, we need to be careful about squandering this this resource. You know, people who are willing to put their lives on their line for America, and it is an amazing willingness and something that we just can't. Should never underestimate.
And I just, so, if I wanted to, Janine, I'm looking at my notes from my memorial service just to tag on to what you're saying. And Command Sergeant Major Knight of the 125th, he said, they raised their hands in defense of our country. You do not have to know them, to respect them, to honor them. They made the greatest gesture when they said, here I am, send me. Sorry.
You're okay.
That sums it up for me. It's like they raised their hands in defense of our country, and he said, you do not have to know them to respect them or to honor them. They made the greatest gesture when they said, here I am, send me. And some of them didn't come home, and that's what you want to acknowledge and remember, them and their families and what it means for our country.
That's
all
right. I don't think you have to know them. I think that's what I've been trying to say. You don't have to know who they are. You don't have to know where they're from. What you have to know, that they are Americans who stood up and accepted the risk and accepted the duty. And that's all you have to know. That's all you have to know.
Yeah, I think you started it brilliantly. Yep.
And so, thank you so much. So thank you so much for this, Cheryl. I just think that I'm so pleased that you had an hour to spend with us. And Debbie Lynn, thank you for your time again today. I hope that anyone that's been with us today has at least of an expanded appreciation for Memorial Day. If you were already here, I'm sorry you didn't call in and tell us that, but thank you so much. I don't like cliches like freedom isn't free, but it's true. All I know is that I believe that America's warriors deserve our respect. And if you don't want that resource squandered, do something about it. But on this day, the thing to do is remember them, never forget them, embrace those left behind, and on another day, let's decide what to do with this unbelievably precious resource. So with that, I'm going to thank Cheryl and Debbie Lynn for being with me today, and I'm going to take just a few minutes to thank a few other people. I want to say thank you to listeners, members, volunteers, and followers. The Coffee Party USA is totally membership-driven. If you've enjoyed this program today, if you enjoy the Facebook site, if you enjoy Scoop It, if you would like to financially support any of the technology behind our social media virtual efforts or the micro staff that wrangles our efforts, the elected board, volunteers, go to coffeepartyusa.com, click on donate, then click on become a member, or click on renew your membership, or click on join me at clicking on sustaining membership, where you can become a part of the financial family that keeps all of this alive. Thank you so much for joining me today. This has been very special for me. This is Janine Loudon, Coffee Party On.